dokie. Why am I so loud? Checking, 1, 2, 1, 2, checking. All right, it like evened out. You know, sometimes it does that thing where like at the beginning of the recording, it's like super loud and then mm-hmm. it fixes itself. Can you hear that?
Yeah. They mining?
They're chewing bones.
Jesus.
Whatever, I'm not taking them away. We'll do same as last time. Hello, I'm Kevin DeCristofano.
I'm Sean Flanagan.
And we are the Ninja Turtle Nerds, your normally a weekly podcast that covers the Ninja Turtle comic books one issue at a time. There is not construction happening behind me, just like last time. My dogs have these like solid bones and I don't want to take them away. So last time it didn't seem to interfere with the audio and they got tired of them pretty quick. So I'm just going to let them go and apologies to the listeners if it's
fine.
Bothersome.
It's a bonus episode.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, this is a bonus episode. I'm sure you saw in the title of the podcast. Today we're here to talk about the 2007 TMNT movie. You know, that CGI one. The odd one out. The one that people don't bring up that often.
Which is weird, because I feel like this is the one I hear the most about from other Turtle fans.
Yeah, but it gets lost in the discussion because everyone's, if they want to talk about how amazing, how much they love a movie, they're either talking about the 1990 movie or some people love the Platinum Dunes ones and they're really passionate. Or if people want to hate on something, they hate on the Platinum Dunes or the third Ninja Turtles movie. And like it's just like in this awkward place where it's not the greatest and it's not worth complaining about. And Secret of the Ooze has the nostalgia factor.
Yeah,
so that gets brought up as like, oh yeah, that was the one I watched the most as a kid, you know? Yeah, that's what we're here to talk about. I mean, it's been a while since we talked, Sean. Let's do some chit chat up front. How you doing?
I'm good. I've jumped back into the realm of the Souls games, so begun that hellacious journey that will be Elden Ring.
I know they're notorious for their difficulty.
I don't know if you get the patience, to be quite honest.
I saw someone on Twitter complaining about people complaining. Like, it was somebody saying, like, it was one of those things where it was about saying, like, stop yelling at people who want there to be an easy difficulty or something. I agreed with them. I was like, yeah, every video game should have an easy setting. Every video game should be for everyone.
Yeah.
And anyone should be able to pick up any game and play it and you know, not necessarily, like, just have different difficulty settings. It's not that hard. Make every enemy's HP 1. Super easy. We call that easy breezy setting.
Yeah, there's not enough easy breezy in games now. I think
I got easy breezy going in Final Fantasy VII Remake because I'm doing my second playthrough.
Okay.
Because they have like a new game plus where you could start the game over with all your progress on your characters.
Yep.
And it's like, I wish every game did that first off because it's so much fun to just like, I'm on easy breezy mode. You know, I'm walking through the first areas of the game, like enemies are dropping with one hit. I know eventually that won't be the case, but like right at the very, very beginning of the game, you're just like dropping people.
I did that with Resident Evil 8 for the second playthrough with all like the upgrades and stuff, and I played it on easy.
Oh, yeah.
It was just funny.
You're
just mowing through everything.
I never played past Resident Evil 4, but even those, and I played Code Veronica, so the first five games I played, and even those earlier ones, oh, and 0, too, so 6. Man, those are weird numbers. The first 6 Resident Evil games, which are numbered 1 through 4 plus 2 extras, they all had, like, things where you'd get, like, a machine gun with infinite ammo by, like, your third playthrough.
Yeah, yeah.
Metal Gear Solid was good at that, too. Like, you'd become invisible, infinite ammo again.
I didn't know Metal Gear did it. Gave you. That's cool.
Oh yeah, Metal Gear. Ever since Metal Gear on PlayStation and Metal Gear Solid on PlayStation, they did it.
Oh.
You beat you. There's two endings to the first one. I call it the first one. We're not counting those NES games or anything. So yeah, there's two endings, and like you, if you do one ending, you get the bandana with infinite ammo. If you do the other ending, you get the camo, the where you're like invisible and no enemies can see you. So by your third playthrough, you have both, and you're like invincible.
I like when they have it tied to something ridiculous, like here's your bandana of infinite ammo.
Yeah. That's everything I got for what I've been up to this week, just playing Final Fantasy and working on this podcast. I should say for the listeners, I think I said this last time, but the reason we're only uploading once a month right now is we're pre-recording the whole season ahead of time because it's a very busy year for me. I'm the one who edits the show. And for those of you who don't know, I'm getting married and that's not really taking up a lot of the time, actually. It's the, because we're doing like a simple wedding. We're just going to go to the town hall, get the paper and have like dinner with our family. But what we're mainly planning is like the trip we're doing afterwards, and trips cost money. So I'm working every day, like from now to then. So I'm working Monday through Sunday, every day of the week. And that's taken up a lot of the time I used to spend on this podcast. So we're pre-recording the season ahead of time. And when the season does start, it'll be 40 weeks in a row. We're going to have 40 episodes this season, 40 weeks in a row, uninterrupted. Every Monday, you'll get our podcast. But until that's ready to go, we got these coming at you once a month. We got at least two more movies to review, and we should be back by then. Stop looking at me. And also, like, I'm also looking into other ways to bring the show to listeners. Like, this is something I haven't even talked to you about, is it's too late for this season because we've already recorded almost the whole season.
Yeah.
But I think when we're doing volume 4, when we start that season, we might do like on Twitch or something, on something where we can like live stream the recording for anyone who wants to watch it that way. And then if you don't want to watch it that way, you can just listen to the podcast and it'll be edited, you know?
So we're getting nice and fancy to prepare for IDW. I like it.
Yeah. And like, comic books are a visual medium. So I figure if anyone, I don't watch a lot of Twitch streams. I watch some YouTubers, but my point is, like, because comics are a visual medium, like, I know, like, you know, we can hold things up to the camera and be like, this is the page I'm talking about, but we won't do it too much because we don't want to ruin it for the people listening to the podcast. So we'll figure that out in about a year. But we're almost done recording the season. Should be up about the time I'm getting married. So you don't know when that is, but it's going to happen. So that's our State of the Union. Let's dive. See, I was timely there. We had a State of the Union recently. Timely. All right. Let's get into TMNT. Cool way to. That's how the kids titled things in 2007. That was like the new thing. You know, text speak was starting to take over. One thing I thought was interesting about this movie, and I could be wrong, I'm gonna have to rewatch it, is Turtles Forever came out in 2007. I mean, in 2009.
Yeah.
This came out in 2007, and I don't think these turtles are in Turtles Forever. They might be in that one scene where you can see, like, a ton of different turtle universes, but it's weird. I don't know. I'm going to have to double-check that fact, but I don't think they are.
I don't remember them being in it.
They need to do a new Turtles Forever.
I was going
to
say.
There's been like five different versions of the Turtles since they made that.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Call it Turtles Forever and Ever. And then just keep adding and ever with each sequel. Forever and ever and ever. So anyway, this movie came out in March, just like the rest of them. It came out in March, so it's the anniversary of this movie, actually.
Ooh, how about that?
At the end of this month. Came out March 23rd, 2007. Ninja Turtles 3 came out in March of 93. Secret of the Ooze was March of 91. The first Ninja Turtles was March of 1990. So they're all in March, the first four.
It's a pretty big gap between this and the last movie.
Well, yeah. It was kind of an awkward time for the Turtles franchise, I feel like, because in my mind, the Turtles franchise got like its second or third wind, however you want to look at the 2003 cartoon in there. I feel like it got its second shot of adrenaline with when almost at the same time the 2012 cartoon started and the year before IDW started doing the comics. So yeah. 2011 they start the comics, and then 2012 the new cartoon starts, and it was like, and then the Platinum Dunes movies came. Or they might have been a little before. Yeah, they were after. They were 2014, right?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, so that was when the franchise started really getting the ball rolling a second time. This was in, like, an awkward era where, like, people were wondering, you know, did everybody just outgrow the Turtles? And this is going to be, like, this weird thing that I'm still obsessed with, but nobody else is anymore, you know?
Yeah, I remember when I saw the trailer for this movie, everyone was like, oh yeah, that's a thing I like. So yeah. That was the extent of like the excitement for it.
Yeah, the 03 series was really what like the only thing that was even keeping Turtles still a thing at this point in Turtle history. Because I'm pretty sure Volume 4 had ended by now. So they weren't even doing comic books.
That's weird.
So the budget for this movie was $34 million, which even though it's the highest Turtle film budget we've covered so far, it's almost nothing for a CGI animated film in 2007. Like, that's very low. And it brought in $95 million worldwide. So $54 million domestic, $95 million worldwide. That's a solid performance,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, good. Because
it's not crazy record-breaking best opening weekend stuff that you see when every time like a Marvel movie comes out, you know, that it breaks a new record.
I mean, it was enough for them to have considered doing a sequel, which unfortunately didn't happen. So it was successful.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. It performed well enough, in my opinion, to invest in one, because they always say like there's like a 60% drop in sequels or something like that. You still would cover your budget with a 60% drop here, right? Or
yeah.
95, maybe not. I don't know. But I don't know. I feel like movies that have performed worse have gotten sequels. So
yeah, I agree. It was
the
kind
only
of
thing
a,
they're going off of.
A weird release. And I almost see it as an independent animated movie because of the fact the budget's so low, and which isn't taking away from it. You know, it's very well done overall.
Well, through various interviews over the years, we've kind of been able to piece together what the plans were for the sequel. And it seems like they had multiple plans, because the one that I was most familiar with before I did the research for this podcast was the one where you see that poster of Michelangelo and the three regular turtles, like his brothers have been demutated. And not a lot is known about that poster, but you can kind of gather from it that, okay, the story would be that for some reason his brothers demutate back to regular turtles. And Michelangelo would be alone again, which is interesting because it's another, like, another version of the Turtles where Michelangelo winds up being the like, lone survivor, quote-unquote. Like, you got Last Ronin, you've got that, you've got the issue of the comic book, you've got quite a few instances where Michelangelo's the last turtle standing. And it's funny because I think writers are coming up with that like completely independent of each other.
Oh yeah, I don't think it's a conscious thing.
There's just
thing.
Like things that repeat in the franchise, like Donatello always has something horrible happen to him. Michelangelo ends up being the last turtle standing. Leonardo ends up getting brainwashed at some point.
Yeah, all right. That is a trope for Leo.
But okay, so back to the sequel. So there was that one, but then I learned about this one researching for the podcast. So Kevin Monroe, who was the director of this film, according to, I think I got this from IMDb. I don't even have a proper source cited here. He already had the blueprints in place for future films. So TMNT 2 would have, it said, loosely adapted the Turtles City at War comic. So that's definitely not the one we saw a poster for.
No, no.
And the quote says, Michelangelo feels like the odd man out among his brothers, not being taken seriously. With the best of intentions, the character runs away and joins the Foot Clan, donning a black bandana. So he would add a black mask. Meanwhile, the Turtles travel to Japan and cross paths with Karai in an adventure resulting in the return of their arch nemesis, Shredder. So, okay, maybe that is the poster. Maybe they went, the other three went to Japan, and when they revived Shredder, it somehow demutated them. And now Michelangelo's the last one standing, but he's in the Foot Clan. That's weird. It also says fans hoping for the return of Bebop and Rocksteady would have been out of luck because the 90s live act, there were still legal rights issues that didn't get resolved yet. So they weren't part of the package yet. I think that got resolved when Nickelodeon bought everything.
Yeah.
When that fixed itself. So TMNT 3 would have featured Triceratons as well as the Technodrome's arrival from Dimension X.
That would have been cool.
It says Donatello would have been the catalyst for those events. There's a quote here from the director. To me, that would have been the great third part of that trilogy, says Monroe. The first movie is about the family reclaiming the city. The second movie is about the boys growing up, losing Splinter. So that wasn't part of the description there. And then inheriting their father's war. And the third movie opens up their world on a level no one could have seen in a Ninja Turtles movie before. So, yeah, interesting to read that, you know? I think I got that from IMDb.
So Kevin Monroe's directed three movies. TMNT, Dylan Dog, Dead of Night, which was not a good movie. I think
so this would have doubled his resume.
Yeah. And the Ratchet and Clank animated movie was the last thing he directed.
So I thought I'd do just a quick budget breakdown of all the movies. We'll get to the movie in a second here. So the first Turtle film, $13 million was the budget, grossed $202. Second movie, $25 million was the budget, made $78 million. So right there was the biggest drop they have the whole franchise. So this made more than both TMNT 2 and TMNT 3, but I guess ticket prices had gone up since then. Anyway. TMNT, the third Ninja Turtle movie, cost $21 million, brought in $54. And the run times of all the movies. The first Ninja Turtles movie is 93 minutes. Secret of the Ooze is 88 minutes. Ninja Turtles 3 is 96 minutes, believe it or not. It's the longest one.
It doesn't feel like it is.
Yeah, I never realized that. And then right after that, this is the shortest one. TMNT is 87 minutes. So it's the shortest by 1 minute.
That's interesting that it did that well to be in a period where they were kind of like a forgotten thing.
Yeah, yeah. I think this movie, you know, it just got hit by all kinds of... I'm sure the Nickelodeon transition had a part in... delaying things. I don't know though, because that was within like 3 years, so like anything that was in pre-production would have had to like be ready by like 2008 or 2009 at the latest. And you know, Nickelodeon buys them probably 2010, I think. So it seems like all of that was happening at the same time. I feel like, and I don't have this confirmed, but I'm willing to bet while they were planning the sequel to this, Nickelodeon was talking to them about buying everything. So if it didn't, if that's not what squashed it, it probably at least put it on hold.
Yeah. So if this is your first movie episode, we add and deduct points throughout the entire movie and at the end come up with the movie credit score.
Yeah, it's a credit score because when you get your credit score, you get the three different numbers. I really should learn what they are for this thing. I know one's the FICO, FICA, FICE something. There's the three credit score numbers. So at the end of this list, we're going to have my score, we're going to have Sean's score, and we're going to have what you'd get if you combined our two lists together. And yeah, so each time we like something, we add a point. We don't like something, we take a point away. Let's get to it. Sean, you've got the first point.
So per tradition, I added a point because I made another turtle movie.
Always worth adding a point for. I don't do it, but you do. I don't. I'm not gonna say it's against the rules. I'm not gonna do it, but I'm not gonna say it's against the rules at any point. Okay, so the first point we actually shared is we both thought the opening of this film is awesome.
Yes.
So for those of you who don't remember, it opens with this like CGI. Well, the whole movie's CGI, it opens with this cool little, not montage. What do you call it when it's not series? You know, there's a word that I'm looking for here. This little, I don't know. The camera follows the turtles running through the city during this little action piece here, and it's totally a Ninja Turtle comic come to life.
Like, oh yeah,
I love the CGI turtles. I hope that the new movies they have in production right now look this good. Like, well, they'll probably look better, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I hope the fluid motion is this good. And this is why I think we've moved on from guys in suits. I know a lot of turtle fans disagree with me, but I still think, like, I see people argue online to this day that they want them to make a turtle movie with guys in suits like the 1990 movie, and you're just not going to get anything as cool as this. Like, even if you do another live action movie, look at the ending of Spider-Man Far From Home. That's out now on home video. Everyone's seen it who wants to by now. That little ending with him running in the snow and stuff, that's all complete CGI. There's no real Spider-Man there. Anytime, like most of the time you see him swinging through the city, that's all CGI. There's no real Tom Holland there, just when he's like landing and stuff. So that's what they could do with the turtles now. They could literally make a live action movie now where the turtles could move through the city like they do in this cartoon movie. And I would love it. And yes, I know that parts of the movie when they're in the suit look great, but you can get way more from doing it this way. So anyway, we added a point for the opening.
So we also added a point for the opening rooftop image because it's Mirage. Mm-hmm. It's just a great nod to Mirage. And we both added a point for the backstory of the villain and scheme being so well told.
Yeah, this is another thing. I think I wrote this multiple times in my notes here, is this feels like the Mirage comics. The opening felt where they did like the little swingy thing felt like the Mirage comics. This here, 10,000 years ago, whenever this takes place, where they're telling the backstory of these warriors, it feels like something that would be in one of those comics where Renette shows up or something. Like, or not, you don't even need her. Like, there was that, you know, the comic where they were walking in the woods and found that ancient castle.
Yeah.
Remember that? Like, it's totally just like mythical storytelling that they were great at doing in the little Mirage studio.
So I gave it a point for the section of the movie that reintroduces us to Leo, who is known as the Ghost of the Jungle. I just like that whole sequence.
Oh, yeah. It's really cool where he, like, it reminds me a lot of Batman Begins, which had been out at this point. when Batman goes out like the first night and you get that part where it's like, where are you? Here. Like, like that's basically what Leonardo does to this guy. So for those of you who don't know, he was, you know, he out training. Master Splinter sent him away to become a leader. And I did on this rewatch question what being a jungle ghost teaches you about leadership. But
well, I mean,
I guess you could say he's on his own. He's got to learn. Like, yeah, I don't know.
Where to
my
put
next
trees.
Point was, I love that all every time a turtle is introduced in this movie, they get that like little graphic that says their name.
Yeah. That's something I'd like to see again.
Yeah. And it definitely feels like, hey, we're setting up a franchise with this movie. You know, like, hey, for anyone who doesn't know, this is Leonardo and his title thing is blue because his mask is blue. He's the blue one. And they do the same thing for the other three turtles as well. I think it's interesting that they don't do it for Splinter, April, or Casey. They only do it for the turtles, but
I could see
Splinter,
maybe. Casey and April, it might have been weird.
No, I want all of it. Everyone who got a best of comic, give Rat King one, because he got a best of comic. He's not even in the movie. They just cut to him in the sewer for a second.
Why won't you listen to me?
homeless mummy, trash mummy.
So when we're reintroduced to Donnie, I gave it a point because he's doing tech support. Which is very fitting and works so well for him.
Yeah, that might be my favorite gag in the movie, is all the things he does while he's doing tech support. All of his lines. No, I'm not playing hard to get. You called me.
And then we're reintroduced to Mikey. I give it a point for that because he's going out as a birthday clown, basically, where he just has a bigger version of his own head he wears, and I just thought that was a pretty clever idea.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of a key difference in how you and I award points, though, because I gave just like that whole section a point, but you separated one for Donatello and one for Michelangelo, so it's just a little difference in our point awardage.
So we
that'll come up later on in this list.
Yeah. I was kind of scrolling through it earlier. So we both deducted for this, but Raph's introduction as Night Watcher.
He's done plenty of solo vigilante stuff in the comics, but he never needed to put ridiculous armor on. I don't like anything about his look in this when he's the Night Watcher.
It's dumb.
He's already
looking.
A ninja. Like, be a ninja.
The lights you put, that looks incredibly stupid.
I mean, that's not going to help with your stealth.
Nope.
Part of me thinks all of me thinks it was done to sell toys. Like, they wanted to have the Raphael figure, and they wanted to have the Night Watchman Raphael figure. So, he kind of looks like Mickey Mouse with those lights on his head. Did you get that vibe?
I could see that, and I don't know. I'm not a fan of the chain weapon thing.
I don't think I'd mind that as much if he wasn't in that armor, though.
I think that would definitely make it better. But they could have went with an all-black ninja outfit.
Yeah, they could have done the one from the Adventure Comics.
Like something.
You know, his wrestling like gear.
A nod to that. Because just the amount of noise that armor has to make.
So we're in agreement there.
And then I added a point because you see Mikey's sick parking skills. Like, it's the tightest alley ever, and he still manages to get the van in the secret entrance. And I just liked him skating back home through the sewers, which, again, this is another area where the fact it's animated helps that sequence so much, because you've seen them skateboard in the movies before. But there was only so much they could do because they were in rubber suits. So it was nice to see them be able to not be limited by, you know, how the film was being made. Now, I'm surprised that only I deducted a point, but I took a point away because there's no subway layer anymore.
Not only did I not take a point away for the lair in this movie, but I almost added a point because I think this lair is so cool. Like, it's not the subway,
okay,
which, don't get me wrong, is still my favorite. But if we got to change it, this is just a cool lair. Like, there's a scene later on in the movie where Donatello's doing something in the foreground, science-y. And in the background, you can see Casey Jones playing on the arcade machine while Michelangelo skateboards in the half pipe. And I was like, that's just a really cool lair. I like it.
All right, yeah, yeah. And then there's a moment where Raph's getting ready to go back home, and I deducted a point because there's no way on earth that Night Watcher armor fits in a duffel bag.
Yeah. I agree with you on that. I didn't think to take a point away for it, but I completely agree. We are ragging on that armor.
Who made that armor?
That's a good question.
Is he got a
nobody
guy?
Nobody knows he's the Night Watchman. Night Watcher. Sorry.
You just like plus the one other version. It's a better name. It is.
Yeah, I wrote that in the notes. Yeah, Leonardo's got a point. Night Watchman is a better name than Night Watcher.
Yeah.
Plus 1 point for this movie nails the Raphael Casey Jones relationship.
I agree.
They do a great job of buddying them up together. Like when Raphael goes out as the Night Watcher, and you know you look sort of like a turtle. What does he say? You look sort of like a turtle in armor or something like that.
Casey's not falling for it.
Yeah. And then I also added a point because about this point, it starts doing the backstory of the Rock Warrior people. And I feel like they had more ideas for what these could be, even though it didn't come up in that thing I read about the other movies. Like, I don't know, they're just such cool characters that if this TMNT movie got its own cartoon show, like the rock monsters would have showed up more. You know what I mean? They feel very underused in this movie.
Yeah.
For how cool their designs are.
I think there are parts down the line where we add and deduct points, but the movie does at times feel overstuffed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even remember them making toys of all of these, and they each have such a unique, distinct, individual look. They almost kind of remind me of you know how Thanos had his crew?
Yeah,
In his crew. It's kind of like that, but I feel like even all of those individual Thanos people got more personality, more individual separation.
Yeah, because they really only focus on the one...
Big Chin.
Big Chin. That's a good way. He's really the only one who gets a lot of screen time.
Yeah, you don't learn much about Lady Sonic the Hedgehog or the other ones. they're really cool designs, and I feel like they're very underused. So, would have liked to have seen more scenes with them maybe separate. I don't know. So you could like get a better feel for who each one was.
Yeah, or even if they'd flesh them out more in the prologue.
But so again, this shortest turtle movie.
Right. So at this point in the movie, April has gone to South America, found Leo, convinces him to go home. So we get this really cool sequence of Leo returning home. And I love that he like is revealed by being on the landing gear of the plane, because usually you only ever see the turtles or anybody else getting on the landing gear of a plane, so it's not too often you see people coming back out of it. So I love that.
And it's also like ties in with their stealth ninja, you know, whole motif.
And then I agree with you, I love when he jumps into the ocean and
I've said it on, I forget which issue it was we were doing, but I love when you see the turtles underwater. We need more underwater turtle action. I want like an Aquaman equivalent story. We haven't gotten that yet in any of the volumes. And I know they can't hold their breath forever because they're turtles, but you could give them some kind of breathing device.
I was going to say, you did that when they went to the space, so there's no reason you couldn't do it underwater.
Yeah. That thing that looked like a straw coming out of their cheek.
So Leo comes home, and I deducted a point because I think it's safe to say now Raph versus Leo's played out now.
This is where I started feeling it was like it was done to death with the series. Someone on Twitter disagreed with me once, I remember. But I, from my point of view, this is, as a Turtle fan, when I saw this movie the first time, I started being like, yeah, this has been done, guys. We've had the 03 cartoon. We had the 1990 movie. We had all the comics where they fight. Raphael and Leo fight. We get it.
But I gave it a point because the Turtles go out on patrol because Splinter wants Leo to start, you know, asserting himself as leader and, you know, training them. And the Turtles jump into a battle going on at a construction site, which, again, benefits from the movie being animated. And it's one of the best fight sequences.
I can't believe I didn't add a point for that construction site fight. Like, yeah, that's a great fight. I love the ending of the fight where they sneak away after, you know, knocking it down a bunch of stories and stuff. I took a point away. I don't know where in the movie to say this, but since they're fighting a monster, I'll say it here. I feel like it was another wasted opportunity. Like, maybe this has to do with, like you said, it's very overstuffed because you've got, like, all the rock monster people, but you also have 12 monsters plus 4 Ninja Turtles, a Splinter, a Casey, and April.
And the Foot Clan.
And the Foot Clan. One thing that I always thought that they were going to do with the, like, I remember when the movie first came out and we were getting little bits and pieces of it, what I thought these monsters were going to be is it seemed like they were all supposed to be things. Like, one of them is definitely like the Jersey Devil. So, like, the rest of them should have been, like, one could have been Bigfoot, one could have been an abominable snowman, one could have been a chupacabra, one could have been Goatman, all these different cryptids. Because they mention in the narration that the monsters have been walking the earth and tormenting people for thousands of years or whatever they say. So, like, you know, make one the Loch Ness Monster, make one an alligator sewer man. Well, that would get confusing with Leatherhead, but you know what I mean? We have all these, like, legendary monsters in our actual mythology. It would have been cool if these monsters turned out to be them in the movie.
Yeah, they're definitely not utilized well throughout the movie because you get this great construction scene fight with this big, like, gorilla-like one. And then the other ones just kind of show up, have a little moment, and then that's it. Yeah. So.
And, like, you wonder, okay, so if these things have been around forever, how come nobody's, like, it doesn't feel like that spite, that one that's like a spider on the bridge, that weird, it actually looks like the thing they fight in Attack of the Clones.
Yeah.
It looks a lot like that spider thing. No one's seen this thing before. It's not.
I thought it was weird, too, because they have the news reports throughout the movie. So I feel like that's a time where you could have had the, oh, something spotted. Could it be blah, blah, blah? You know, like, just to tie it in somehow. But at the end of the fight, I gave it a point for Mikey giving them a rating for how they did on their night back out. Yeah. It was really good.
Give us an 8 for style, a 9 for technique, and a 2 for stealth.
So it's a really, I don't know, there's a lot of really good moments, but like we said, it's kind of overstuffed. So we have this moment where the Foot Clan and Karai go back and report to Winter. And that's when he introduces the Stone Generals to the Foot. And I deducted a point because I didn't understand why he hired the Foot. Because it seems like the Stone Generals are perfectly capable of tracking the monsters down on their own. So it just seems like a reason to just have the Foot Clan there, like, oh, you guys track them and then they'll capture them. And I don't feel like you needed both.
I agree. That's probably a studio note at some point, because at this point of the Turtle franchise, they're not going to let them make a Turtle movie without the Foot Clan. And it's more toys.
And then I gave it a point for Donnie using a book to research the monsters, because I just like that.
But one thing we both like, speaking of what the characters like, I love Splinter saying that he's got to go watch his stories. He's talking about the Gilmore Girls. Splinter being into his daily soap operas is great.
And then I gave it a point, but it's a wasted opportunity too. You just get a montage of the Foot and the Stone Generals capturing the monsters.
So we were close to meeting up here. This was almost the same point, but you go ahead with yours.
I deducted a point because Casey and April just feel tacked on in the movie to me.
All right, so the only reason I didn't count this as the same point is I disagree about Casey. I feel like he contributes enough to Raph's story to justify being in this movie.
Okay.
But April in this movie, there's so much that happens in her life between Ninja Turtles 3 and here that's unexplained. And, like, she's not a reporter anymore. Her and Casey are, like, moving antiques for clients, I guess. You don't really get any information on what the heck, like, who is this April? We don't get enough. She can fight all of a sudden. She's really good at fighting in the end battle. It almost feels like a different character because we're not given any information on who this April is.
I thought it was weird that they didn't just have it that she reopened the shop and then, like,
I'll go as far as to say, like, my point with April here is I feel like she is the thing that most prevents this movie from feeling like it fits with the other three.
Yeah.
Because this doesn't feel anything like the April we've seen with those movies.
Because even if the explanation was Casey and April go find these artifacts for people so that they can get money to restart the business or something like that.
Yeah. But my thing is, like, I'm not even sure what she does. Like, we know she gets the statues for this guy, but, like, what is her business? What does she do? She apparently was able to take time to go to South America and see Leonardo as well.
Right.
Like, well, she got the statues while she was there. But, like, I don't know. It's just really weird that it feels like there's an entire backstory of April here that we're not getting, and they're just like, here's this character you know everything about, and we're like, no, we don't know. What are you talking about? Who is this person? And then I added a point, you know, there's the whole, I think I put this in out of order, I don't know, but the night watcher goes out with Casey and they come across one of the monsters, and this is where Raphael gets the foot clan hits him with the tranquilizer.
Yeah, yeah.
And anyway, the scene with Casey and Raphael in the shed, I think is really awesome, where they're trying to break into the shed and get them, and Raphael's just been tranquilized. Like, there's a good amount of suspense in there, and it's very much like a horror movie where the monster's trying to break in and you got nowhere else to go. I thought it was a really cool scene.
And it goes into what you were saying, that they really nail the relationship between the two of them.
Yeah, this definitely feels like a typical Casey and Raph go out, you know, to blow off some steam adventure.
So this is the Man-Bat Monster, I think, at this point.
Yes.
And I gave it a point because one of the generals just picks up a dumpster and smashes it with it. I just thought it was a funny moment. And I gave it a point for, hey, Raph, because I thought that was hilarious.
If you haven't seen the movie in a while, there's this hilarious moment where, so Raphael's been tranquilized. Casey brings him back to the apartment he lives in with April. Again, Casey and April live together now.
Yeah.
Not something we've seen coming. Like, who are these people? And then the turtles get there eventually, and Michelangelo just has this hilarious moment where he's just like nonchalantly like, hey, Raph, who's passed out from tranquilizers.
So we go back to Winters, and I deducted a point because I feel like he's just an uninteresting villain.
again, he's because this movie's so loaded, he's just not given enough because, I mean, he's given more than some, well, we could say, but.
Yeah, but.
He is the one that we actually know why he's doing what he's doing. Well, you know what, the rock monsters too, but the monsters, I don't know. I'm thinking live here, like it's all just firing. But yeah. Yeah, they could have done more with him. I could see that.
I guess he's a slight step up from Walker, but not by much.
I mean, we know he's trying to get his family back together and trying to not be immortal anymore. So it's about as much motivation as Shredder had now that I'm thinking about
it. Yeah, yeah, that's true. So,
well, he had a personal grudge with Splinter too, but anyway. I wrote here, this same scene, I never noticed before that in this scene, there's a Triceratops, like, fossilized skull in his office. And I wonder if that's supposed to be a Triceraton, since the director mentioned that the third movie
maybe.
Would have them.
Maybe. Because, yeah, it's conceivable Winters would know about that then.
Yeah.
So, I think this is
or
more...
Or maybe he doesn't even know what he has.
That's
maybe
true
he's
too.
Got a fossilized Triceraton skull and he thinks it's a Triceratops.
I do kind of like the thing they do where he's like all the great conquerors in history. Mm-hmm. Though I don't really know how he would have made himself super known, but also like completely anonymous at this point in history. But I deducted a point.
So you took a point away here for the Kevin Smith cameo. I don't even know where Kevin Smith is in this movie.
He's the diner owner. When they go to the diner and Raph fights the Jersey Devil. But this is why...
Man, this was this era where he was getting in everything. He was in Daredevil. He was in Die Hard. He's in this. He was in Die Hard, right? The fourth one?
Yeah, he was. So yeah. I deducted it because at this point in history now, as we record, I'm just tired of seeing him show up and stuff. We get it.
I wax and wane on my Kevin Smith opinions. Like, sometimes I'm like, oh, you know, he's a cool dude. He seems very chill. You know, he's got great stories. But other times I'm like, look, you're inspiring the wrong people.
So I need a break. He needs to take a few,
yeah.
few years off and not cameo in anything. And then this was just in the point in the movie I noticed it. I deducted a point because I missed John Duprez doing the music. There's really nothing stand out about the score in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't even notice it
yeah,
had
it's
one.
It's very generic. It almost seems like temporary music. Like, it's just very generic, just like, dun, dun. Like,
so,
you know, like.
I thought it was odd to not bring him back since he had scored the other three movies and. That seems like it just would have been an easy transition.
Bum, bum. That's what this music is.
So I gave it another point for the shot of Leo in the shadows on the roof because it just looks so cool. But then I immediately deducted a point because this is when Leo is going after Night Watcher. And he gives this big lecture speech about vigilantes, and I just tuned out. I just didn't care.
Don't blame you.
The actual fight between Leo and Raph in the rain, I gave a point, because the fight itself is very cool and felt very comic book to me. But I also deducted a point because it's Leo and Raph fighting. So.
Yeah. Well, here's where you and I differ, because I kind of just lumped all those things you just said into one point, where I took a point away for, you know, basically Leonardo and Raphael having this big epic battle, because this is the main thing. I remember when this movie came out, I had an office job where I you know, had my desk and my computer. I was working in an office, and I spent a lot of time on the IMDb message boards back then. And... like, I remember the big thing they did promoting this movie in interviews and everything was talking about how this is going to be the movie where we finally see the knockdown, drag out fight between Raphael and Leonardo. We're finally going to see those two go head to head. Like, it was in all the interviews, like, this is what everyone's been waiting for. And I was just like, is it? Like, they were treating it like it was Anakin and Obi-Wan in Revenge of the Sith, like, which is an actual fight talked about as kids, because you heard the rumors that, like, Obi-Wan Kenobi beat Anakin in the fight, and that's why he was the way he is. So, like, your whole childhood, you waited to see it. This isn't that. Like, no. I they have their disagreements, but this movie makes it seem like Raphael hates Leonardo. And it's like trying to build up this fight with all this hatred, and it kind of makes him unlikable for the first, like, 3/4 of the movie. It's almost like you need the Casey Jones scenes to make him less unlikable.
Yeah.
I don't know. He's mad at Leo for going away training, but it was Master Splinter who asked him to do that. I don't know. I feel like part of this movie didn't understand Raphael as well as other versions of the Turtles have. He's rude, he's sarcastic, but he's not a jerk. And, you know, he and Leonardo have disagreements in the comics, but it's usually over, like, hey, let's run in guns blazing, and Leonardo saying, let's take our time and plan an attack. It's that simple, you know? It's that scene from Avengers. I have a plan. Attack. That's Raphael. Raphael is Iron Man, Leonardo is Captain America.
This version almost makes it seem like the smallest thing will set this version of Raph off.
Yeah. But it's not, there's another pairing though, right there. Like, it's not to the point where Iron Man and Captain America, where the Turtles are going to have a civil war. It's not that hyped, you know? Yeah. So, I don't know, maybe to some Turtle fans it is that serious, but I always get the impression, as four brothers, you know, they all love each other, they all you know, some get on their nerves more than others, and they, Raph and Leo, have different approaches to things, but it never felt to me like they had to come to blows.
Yeah, I agree. He's my favorite turtle, but this might be the worst version of him.
Yeah. So that said, I didn't add a point for this, but it is a really cool, it's a great sequence. Like, if you take all that out of it, like the pouring rain and, like, everything you said, like, I do like it. It's just, I don't want to see two characters I love this, you know, fighty. And then we both added a point for Leonardo being mistaken for one of the monsters. I thought that was kind of,
I like that.
Interesting story beat.
I like that the generals do it on purpose.
Yeah, they trank him up and they're basically like, is this the 12th monster we're missing? And they're like, ah, he won't know the difference. Just take it back. Like,
so I deducted a point because Karai has shown up again, and either make her the main villain or don't have the Foot Clan in the movie.
Yeah, and this was a really cool Karai, too. She, you know, she was definitely like a confident Karai that you could tell is not to be trifled with.
Yeah, and I guess this is the
I guess the next movie would have had more of her.
This was the beginning of her kind of being in every version afterwards.
Yeah, she wasn't big yet. She hadn't even had, like, the IDW version yet. And then we both added a point for this amazing fight scene at the end. So it all culminates, there's you know, they're going towards the building with Winters inside, and there's like hundreds of foot soldiers outside, and you get this great tracking shot where the Turtles are fighting together and Splinter is fighting with them.
Yeah.
Really, really cool stuff.
So they get into the building, and there was an earlier scene where Casey almost knocked over a vase, and that's how, like, the security system goes off. So here he uses that to their advantage and purposely breaks the vase to keep the Foot Clan in the building. So I like that. And
it was a nice callback.
I like the part where they say, Mikey, remember our talk.
And then eventually, so now we're jumping over big chunks of the movie, but I guess most of it's action, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
eventually they have to go out and get the real 12th monster after they rescue Leonardo, and they're like, this isn't the right one. Someone's going to get it. And it eventually leads to this scene, which I know was done in The Incredibles, where it's they're like fighting like a married couple during a car chase. But this there's a great bit with Casey and April driving and the monsters behind them, and they're like luring it back. And it, even though it was also done in a different movie, it's just, it worked for me both times. I think it's hilarious.
It's probably their best moment together in the movie.
Yeah.
So I gave it a point for the turtles fighting the generals, because again, it's just a lot of cool stuff. And there's a, this is the end of the movie. They get the last monster. Winters, you know, gets the generals back in the portal. He's no longer immortal. He turns into dust, because apparently that's what everyone who's immortal does. And he floats away, and I gave it a point because Mikey thinks he's in his nose now. They do a really good Mikey, even though
he's
not in the movie much. And I gave it a point. This is literally the only scene that seems to make it a part four, but the fan service shelf that just has all the stuff from the previous movies that, for some reason, Splinter allows Raphael to add the goofy helmet from his Night Watcher getup to.
Yeah, any other connection to the other movies is just the vague notion that these turtles aren't, this isn't an origin story. You know, these turtles have, you get the impression they've been on adventures before. But other than that.
And then I know you don't agree with this. I deducted a point because the designs in the turtles just looks off to me.
You know, I don't agree enough to take a point off, but on this viewing, I will say, I think what it is, I don't think the CGI has aged very well in lots of places. In the same way where you'll watch the first Toy Story movie, you know, and be like, oh, that looks kind of rough there. Even a movie from 2007, you know, it's old now. And it's some of that CGI, especially in their mouth movements, when like you can see like all their teeth and all the way back in their mouth. I like the design of the turtles, but I agree that at certain points they do look weird. And I think it's like, this is something you'd see. This is the type of CGI you'd see in a commercial now. It's not movie CGI.
Mid-2000s CG is now commercial okay CG in the modern time.
Yeah, this is something you'd see in like an insurance commercial. This is above, a little bit above the general. So it's better than that, but.
And then we both gave it a point for Shell Shocked.
Yeah, my favorite TMNT movie tie-in song. Sorry to all the others, but I don't dislike the others. I just like this one the most. And I hate that it's not on Spotify. It's hard to find, actually, because the 2014 soundtrack also had a song called Shell Shocked, and that's what pops up when you try to find this one.
Yeah, because I did the notes for this and that the same day, and I'm like, wait, this song's also Shell Shocked? So I don't know why you can't get the 2007 version, but it's a better song. And then I took a few points away at the end here. I deducted a point for Patrick Stewart, Sarah Michelle Gellar, and Chris Evans, just because I feel like they could have just got great voice actors instead of names. And none of them are bad in the movie, but
I think Chris Evans does a great job, because I know it's him when I like am outside the movie, but I never hear Chris Evans when I'm watching the movie. And I watch a lot of Marvel, so that's impressive to me.
Okay. I deducted another point because I just feel like they wasted the foot the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then my final deduction is, it's a really good turtle movie, but you don't get enough Mikey and Donnie. And I feel like they have some of the best parts in the whole thing.
Just like the first film.
Oh, yeah.
They lacked in that one, too. Yeah. So when all is said and done and all the scores are added up, we are getting closer in our scoring, which is good. We're kind of balancing out now. So you scored this movie a 10, and even though I had way less points to make, I also scored this movie a 10.
Huh.
And if you combine our two lists together, it comes out to be a 12. And why don't they match up completely? Because there were some points you made I didn't. There were some points I made you didn't. So when you combine the two lists together, you end up with 12 points.
How's that fall so overall?
So the third Ninja Turtle movie, you scored a 9. So you thought it was 1 point worse than this one. I scored that a 7. So, you know, we were close at this point, 7 and a 9. And our combined score for that was a 10, which makes sense because Turtles 3, it's a good movie, not as good as this one, in my opinion. And all three numbers are slightly below.
Okay.
Right? And I feel like that's about right. TMNT 2, we were all over the map on. You scored it a negative 13. I scored it an 11. So that combined list was a negative 6. It's going to be an asterisk in the history books for that one. And then the 1990 movie, it was almost the opposite. You only yeah. went up to a 17. I went all the way up. My score was 34.
Yep.
And the combined score was 44 for that movie. So I doubt that'll ever be topped.
I got a funny feeling.
That's the best one.
We're never getting back to that point, but okay, so
we're just handing out points left and right. Every 2 seconds that movie did something we liked. And then right now, while we got a second here, I'm just gonna go to Twitter. I put out a post today saying that we were gonna be recording about this movie, and we've gotten quite a few replies.
I was gonna say this is a Generations Turtle movie, which is cool. So I figured you'd get a lot of responses.
Some of them were in Russian. So whatever listener is replying in Russian, I'm sorry. I don't know what that is, and I can't translate it right now. But thank you for listening to the podcast, if you do. So let me get here. So we got one reply here by Toy Reviews on Twitter, Toy Reviews by LL. They say, I didn't get that this movie was connected to the original live-action movies of the 90s until years later. I love the theme about the importance of family, which comes through. I really like that.
Yeah, yeah.
We got another reply here. It was neat. 2007 had some beautifully shot moments and a few heart-stopping ones. The writing and editing seemed to get messy near the end, though, which we talked about. Some scenes that should have been thrilling and memorable felt a bit flat, like the fight scene in the garden outside Winter's compound. The voice cast was wonderful, and I especially loved Nolan North as Raphael. Beautifully animated, great cast, and an underappreciated gem in the TMNT catalog. That fight scene in the rain between Raph and Leo was amazing. Amazing potential, but the plot... These are all different posts, by the way. I just don't want to give everybody's name out. Amazing potential, but the plot was ridiculous. A sequel would have been good, though, if they brought Super Shredder back and replaced Chris and Sarah and Chris with Elias and Judith. Now that I would have lined up to see. Way better than the Bay ones, someone said. Better than TMNT 3 and 2, I put this one behind the 1990 film. Underrated.
Okay.
We got some Russian here. Love this movie. Second favorite Turtles movie. A lower budget with a beautiful look. Seeing the fall of the team with Leo away showed how much individuality they all had and how much they relied on each other to be one. Raph's outfit was awesome, along with his bike. The voice casting was very good with Chris Evans, Nolan North, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Patrick Stewart, and more. It was fun to see Casey Jones and April be in the fight for the first time since 1990. See that? I definitely agree with. Like, I like that April was able to be in the end fight there. Yeah. I just wish there was a reason for it. We don't know why she knows how to fight all of a sudden. The 2012 cartoon show built it up slowly with her training with Splinter and stuff.
Right.
It was an interesting storyline. In the Ninja Turtles universe, I didn't find it too far-fetched. He just wanted to go home. My favorite scene was on the rooftop between Leo and Raph. Very intense. Some issues are never resolved, especially between family. The look of the turtles was cool. I feel like Splinter was cool looking too, but didn't quite fit in with the rest of the art of the characters. Wish this movie had more success, got its deserved sequel, had a better toy line, etc. Definitely agree about the toy line. I said earlier in this podcast, like, all those rock people should have had their own individual figures. Mikey was genius in having a job where he could be himself and just put a giant turtle head where no one was the wiser. Donatello loves the tech, but you could see just how annoyed he was working as a tech customer service rep. Leo being mysterious and protecting the village was a cool way to see how he could help others and find ways to help his brothers and his city. They get to use their weapons again, too. That's a good point. The foot scene with all of them fighting as one was enjoyable. Seeing Karai at the end with a tease of possible Shredder return was exciting and sad to never see it come into fruition. At the end, it was a cool nod to the previous movies with things like Shredder's helmet and the Time Scepter. TMNT 2007 opening day was a great time. 15 years. Wow.
15 years.
Yep. What are we doing with our lives, Sean? This movie clearly feels new to me.
Everything we should be doing.
So yeah, feel free to, you know, email us or let us know any other thoughts you have about this movie. And, you know, if you send us emails, we'll read them on the show. You're not going to hear them until our main season starts. And you know what? If you email us, I will read it the next time we do a movie. So when we're doing the Platinum Dunes movie next, the 2014 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, or is that one just called Ninja Turtles?
Nope, it's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
It's called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but they threatened. I'm using that word. They threatened. There was a point where they were only going to call the movie Ninja Turtles.
Yep.
And the internet said no. The internet was like, you cannot do that. And then eventually they said, they acted like they weren't, but they put out a bunch of promotional material, I remember, that just said Ninja Turtles, and everyone was like, this cannot be the name of the movie.
And it seems like such a trifle compared to all the actual things wrong with it, so.
Yeah. See, I think that movie is part of why people are like, I want another Turtles movie with guys in suits, because of what happened there, and I'm like, the CGI wasn't the problem. It was the fact that they were animated like 3,000-pound Transformers. And we'll get to that next time. Next episode's going to be about that. Thank you all for listening. These are our thoughts on this movie. I'll try to save my thoughts on that movie for then.
It gets a perfect score.
Yeah. I mean, I don't not like it. Like, it's going to have plenty of pluses. It might end up like Amazing Spider-Man, where it has just as many pluses as it does minuses, and it ends up with a zero. I don't know. But, yeah. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back with our season shortly. We're still working on it from behind the scenes. I'm working every single day. Don't have time. Like, I have time to record the podcast. That's the easy part. It's the research and editing the shows together that takes time. So...
You got time to
read. Recording the podcast, no problem. We're recording, you know, two episodes a week at this point. It's just getting them edited that I don't have time for. So thank everybody for listening. We will see you next time. And we will also see you when the season launches. You know, some people are listening to this years in the future where it's all just there in the timeline.
Lucky.
And they don't have a huge delay. That's what we're doing. We're doing delays. We're like Mirage Comics.
See?
The season is just a little delayed.
It all comes back around.
We're working on it. It's just got a delay. If you can wait 8 months in between issues for Turtle Comics, you can wait for our season. All right. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next time.
The Ninja Turtle Nerds is a fan-supported podcast. If you'd like to support the show, head on over to patreon.com/TMNTnerds. If you'd like to see images of the comics we discussed in this episode, you can follow us on Twitter or Instagram at TMNTnerds. Have a question or comment for us? You can email us at TMNTnerds@gmail.com. And if you like the show, be sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Thank you very much for listening.